With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
He smashed it.
Say again?
He hammered.
He's hammered, mate. Listen to
No. Pretty sober. Fun come.
It's Wednesday, which means it's time for the Front Three Q&A with me, Adam Bold, the one and only Chris Hennage.
Good evening.
Changed up there.
It always surprises us on the mute whenever you do that, so you hear us go, ooh. Yeah.
Of course you're doing the same, but. And of course, David O'Brien up in Manchester. Dave, how you doing?
Yeah, good. Very, very good after the result. Positive.
Good. We're going to be talking about Manchester United versus Manchester City. We're going to be talking about all the EFL results and the draw for the next round. We're also going to be taking your question, as always, on a Wednesday. But Dave, as you said, is it a well place to start? It is Manchester United 1, Man City 0. Arguably, Jose Mourinho needed that result more. What did you make of the performance and the win?
Yeah, it was a very good performance. I think every single player on the pitch, the 11 players that started and the substitutes were all excellent. I think Mourinho slightly tweaked his tactics. Something that I kicked out on Dave Talks is that Mourinho needs to leave another player off to sort of break with Zlatan Ibrahimovic. And that's what Marcus Rashford did. He sort of was waiting for the counters, and it combined very well with Zlatan. A number of times Zlatan just taking his time on the ball, playing that through ball. But it was a better performance. You know, someone like Ander Herrera giving United a lot of energy in midfield. He's been playing deep in midfield as the number six, but today he played sort of the eight role and was absolutely phenomenal. His work rate is tireless. Kept on running, kept on pressing, and kept on causing City a lot of problems. And I think this is where United need to go. They just need to get some momentum. It was a big result. I think Pep Guardiola, obviously coming to the Premier League, it didn't seem like he really cared about the League Cup. The team he played, nine players that would start for City weren't in that team tonight. But it's one of those things where he's not really managed a side that has such a big City rivalry to throw these games away. So I think it meant a lot for the City fans, and obviously they came out losers today. So I think it's one of those things where Pep Guardiola, they need to understand the City of Manchester a little bit more.
That's an interesting point. I mean, in terms of Guardiola, for a second there, it is the first time he's ever gone six games without a win in his entire career, Dave. As you said, it may have not been their priority. I mean, he said as much himself, the EFL Cup was the lowest priority for City. I mean, what did you make of the way he set up his team? And did you feel it didn't throw it away, but that, you know, the United put out such a strong team that City were always going to struggle?
It was a weird one. It was sort of like he set them up in a 4-4-2. You know, Leroy Sané was playing off Ian Acho. And it's not really Guardiola-esque in a way. You know, he had no control in midfield. United completely bossed that area. And, you know, went through spells of the game where they dominated possession, something that you wouldn't expect to happen against a Pep Guardiola team. So the setup was interesting. Lito was very poor. Kompany was pretty poor on the ball, but defended quite well. You know, was covering over a number of times that, you know, United had beaten the first tackle. But it was just a weird selection of Kolarov coming on in the second half at centre-back. Not the best player there. But United, you know, United did break them down, and City just weren't good enough. And it was very un-Pep Guardiola-esque, which was a bit strange.
Chris, did you watch the game?
My thoughts were it was a very cagey affair, which is what always happens with the derby. I think maybe the City players aren't as adaptable in terms of being able to put into different positions. I mean, Kolarov was put in central midfield, it looked like, from where I was watching. I think there was positives for City to take. The positives was Mafio. I thought he was really handy. He could actually maybe even challenge Abeleta at right back. But overall, I think you saw two managers with very different priorities. And Pep said himself, this was the fourth rated competition for him relative to his own goals. And Mourinho maybe needed that, if you pardon the pun, little pep in terms of morale and everything. So he really went for it. And Man United were the better side, I would say, overall.
Dave, Dave, what was what was the atmosphere like at Old Trafford? What were the fans feeling before? Because obviously you got absolutely trounced by Chelsea, and the worry would have been obviously because you were very confident maybe before the Chelsea game as well, but similar could have happened here.
It was a little bit nervy, you know. United, the start, the United fans were really good, and then you know, around 10 minutes it got a bit nervy. Then it's come 35 minutes when United put their foot on the ball and started to really dominate the game. You know, the fans got behind them. I mean, they got behind Mourinho, especially in the second half. Mourinho's Red Army was, you know, one of the chants that was ringing around for the last 15 minutes over and over and over again. So I think it's just getting these, you know, getting behind the team is a big thing for United fans. Obviously, they are used to such success, but one of the big things is they can't get, you know, when United do look nervy on the pitch, the fans shouldn't be pushing that across. You know, there were times where De Gea was playing slow at the back and everybody, oh, play it forward, play it forward. You know, you don't, as a fan, for me, I wouldn't be doing that thing. It's, you know, you want to be motivating the players, you want to be pushing them forward, you know, maybe supporting them in a way. And so, you know, it was a bit of a weird feeling, but then as soon as the goal went in, as soon as the second half came, United really put their foot down, then, you know, it was a very good atmosphere. And, you know, credit to the United fans and credit to the City fans.
Do you think there's vindication in terms of the way that Juan Mata plays? He obviously got the goal.
Yeah, Juan Mata's an interesting one because he gives something that you don't really see on the telly. He's the one that's constantly running behind. It's his movement that he's really improved, and I think that's what he is now. He's no longer like a playmaker that's going to step on the ball and is going to dictate the play. It's all of his movement off the ball, running and behind, and it gave United something else. It gave United a threat. When Zlatan dropped, it wasn't just Rashford going behind, but it was Juan Mata as well, and he took his goal very well. But I think credit to Zlatan Ibrahimovic getting a lot of stick in the media this week because he's not taking his chances. Missed a big chance tonight, but his performance was phenomenal, I thought. He was really good playing in between the lines, in between the Manchester City defence and midfield, and getting the ball, turning on it and taking his time. The first maybe 15 minutes he was rushing everything. Then he slowed himself down, you know, the pass for Marcus Rashford. That's one of the best passes I've seen this season. You know, a lovely little roll over the ball, then a through ball with the outside of his foot. It was quality, and it was, you know, it sort of summed up Zlatan's performance, getting that assist and really contributing in the game.
Good. Dave, what about, are you going to go to Mourinho's hotel now? Maybe cheer him up a little bit?
Yeah, I think we're going to go and have a bottle of Portuguese red, I think.
A port, maybe.
A port.
Dave, before you go, what do you think of the draw for the next round? Take on West Ham.
It's a good draw. West Ham, you know, they've been struggling this year. A very good result today. But before that, they've been struggling a bit. So it's a good result, a good draw for Manchester United, especially considering they're going to be playing at Old Trafford and, you know, they will be up for it. And Mourinho does love the League Cup. Something that we always forget, Mourinho loves the League Cup. It's a momentum builder. You're in the League Cup, you kick on in the league. I think that's something that Mourinho's done at every single, you know, bit at Chelsea both times he was there. It's a positive thing for United. Again, it's all about building momentum and confidence. Again, Paul Pogba was so frustrating in the first half, was trying too much, wasn't playing the simple pass. Second half comes, hit the post, pushed out to the left wing, looked confident, looked good on the ball. And it's one of those things that the whole United, all the United players need confidence, and this will give them confidence.
Good stuff. Well, David, enjoy Manchester. I assume you're out on the lash. You going for a few pints, or is it taking it easy?
A few beers. Obviously, me and New Bolt hit the town pretty hard in London yesterday, so I've been suffering all day
recovering.
Long. I'm just back. I'm having a quiet one tonight, but we never know where that will go.
Must have missed that invite.
He was in the office.
Of course he was.
The TFR Towers.
Adam just got angry because I went for lunch with someone else the other day and he gave me like a little emoji which said, I'm disappointed, but I'll get you back.
I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed.
I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed.
Dave, enjoy Manchester. We'll speak to you soon.
Brilliant. Cheers, chap. Speak to you.
Bye. We also had Mourinho apologise. What did you make of that, Lawrence? Did you see that gesture? He did the little 4-0 and then a little sort of praying gesture, which I found bizarre.
Yeah, I guess he just sort of acknowledges that it was a little bit humiliating, a bad result, and something maybe that United fans don't expect. And I think he's just trying to get them back on his side. Sure, it's a humble thing, isn't it? Apparently, you can be humble.
Yes. Yeah. Who would have thought Jose Mourinho being humble? Back on Mourinho with the hotel issue you bring up. There was a question that came in from Virginia Blue saying, how hard is it to really live in a hotel? Stop the whinging, Moo. Now, for those who may not have seen this story, Lawrence, can you explain what Virginia Blues is referring to?
Well, Virginia's talking about I think it was back on the back of the mirror that the paper, the Mirror, not the actual Mirror that Mourinho wrote this. It was written for Mourinho in the back of the Mirror, the newspaper. And basically he was saying, oh, I'm really unhappy. I'm away from my wife and my kids. I'm living in a hotel. But, you know, it's not like he's in a travel lodge. All right. He's sort of, you know, he's in a nice hotel. It's not Alan Partridge. He's not sort of, you know, yes, drying his pants in the microwave and stuff. He's actually in a very nice hotel. But I can kind of get it. What he's trying to do is show people what he's going through for Manchester United. Which I also don't get, because why is he in a hotel when you can rent? And I'm sure Manchester United have the power to rent much nicer houses in places where he could easily bed in. And I think it sort of shows the status of Mourinho's life at the moment, and the fact that he hasn't looked to bed in Manchester yet, which is unusual. You know, considering
he described it as a disaster. I believe my life in Manchester is a bit of a disaster.
Yeah, I think he is someone who likes to create that sort of an illusion that things can be a bit of a struggle sometimes, siege mentality for himself as well as his players. And I also think he's trying to get people on his side by showing, look what I'm doing. There are things behind the scenes, I think, that are going on that maybe we can't talk about on the podcast, but that would maybe make you a little less sympathetic. And I think maybe whoever tweeted that would also allude to the fact that he is getting paid a lot of money to stay in a very nice hotel, which I'd imagine has its perks. Like, it's, you know, your pants in a microwave and stuff.
Yeah, of course. It is a strange one for him to sort of emphasize, really, and, you know, sort of painting his picture of his life in a goldfish bowl almost. It's a weird thing to,
I mean, it
isn't
a goldfish bowl, but I also do sort of wonder where the quotes come from, which camp they came from. You know, Mourinho is a very sort of, apparently from behind the scenes, become quite an up and down character at times, which maybe makes him sound slightly more volatile. And, you know, being away from your family is hard. So, you know, I think we can all probably sympathise with that. But I don't know, I guess because Mourinho's misled so many people in the past, we're all sceptical of what he's actually saying now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, the exact quote, which is bizarrely brilliant, was, for me, it's a bit of a disaster because I want sometimes to walk a little bit and I can't. I just want to cross the bridge and go for a restaurant. I can't, so it's really bad. But I do have apps where I can ask for food to be delivered. So there you go.
Mourinho there describing most normal people's everyday life.
Yeah. Just ordering it. Yeah. Just get a delivery, get any routes. Walter Smith from Blue Moon Rising TV.
Good guy.
Lovely guy. He also said, did the derby matter more to Manchester United or more than City? I think it's fair to say yes. I think Dave, it's an interesting point Dave writes or said there about how maybe the City fans would have been disappointed. It feels like the fans themselves maybe cared about the match because of the rivalry as opposed to the competition itself. Obviously, Guardiola fielding a much changed team, 9 changes. I think a lot of youth players in there compared to the team that Mourinho put out with Pogba in there, with Mata, with some of the key stars. And I think United needed to win more because at the end of the day, City, although they were out winning 6 now, they are top of the table at the end of the day. I think Mourinho needed that for a little boost, essentially. So great. I'd say it matters in terms, maybe not the fan bases, because obviously that rivalry is so passionate, is always going to matter. But in terms of who did it matter more to in terms of result, I think it has to be Manchester United. Let's move on to the other big game tonight, then, shall we? West Ham winning 2-1 to Chelsea on the pitch. Kristen, did you manage to catch any of this game, or did you manage to catch any of the highlights?
Caught the goals.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, Chelsea FC writes in saying, should Chelsea really be concerned about the result tonight? Should they be concerned? I mean, West Ham
losing is never great.
Seems to put in a great performance. Well, I didn't address that to them particularly. Yes, they should be really concerned.
Should be panicking and debating if Conte is really the right man, and are any of these players really right?
It's only days after that 4-0.
Chris.
It's just such a mess, isn't it? He essentially tried a few different players looking at the starting line. We brought in Ola Aina and Nathaniel Chalobah. I don't think it's a massive change. I just wonder, looking at that, if a 3 at the back is the wisest idea when you consider that it's John Terry, Gary Cahill and David Luiz. We all have our opinions on David Luiz. I think Gary Cahill has been indifferent this season. I've seen instances where he looks very wobbly and very shaky. And John Terry is not someone I think is suited to a back three unless it's very organised and the space is very well managed, because he's obviously not the quickest anymore. You put in front of that, you've got Azpilicueta playing in midfield, defence, kind of hybrid position. That's a bit awkward, and it's on the left as well. So, again, he's right-footed. I just think it was a little bit of experimentation that maybe didn't quite go as planned. And I think, honestly, in this competition, it's not a terrible idea to experiment. It's not a terrible idea to bring young players in. I think, if anything, for all the stuff that we throw Chelsea's way in terms of they never give young players a chance, this was actually a really good idea to try and give Ola Aina and Chalobah a chance, because Aina's a bit younger, but Chalobah in particular, I think he's very much on that line of, if he doesn't break through soon, he's probably going to have to start looking somewhere else for football, because he's getting... don't want to say old, but he's getting old for a young player, which is slightly oxymoronic, I know.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. What do you think of Conte's new system, Chris? Considering that you were so quick to pour scorn on him the other day on the podcast.
Yeah.
You wanker.
You'd think he saw my missus.
Give me a second series.
Smell my cheese. I think the system, looking at it, again, I don't have the benefit of seeing much of the game, so I don't want to bring any sweeping judgments. From the highlights that I saw on Channel 5, it looked like there was moments of fluency. I mean, he brought Hazard on, which is always going to change things. I think for him at the minute, he's still trying to work out maybe what the best system is. The one against Man United looked much better, not just because they won 4-0. It just seemed to suit the players a bit better. I think that's the difficulty, and we've talked about this, or I have, because I hate Chelsea, remember?
Yeah.
They're in a little bit of transitional period, I think. They've got a few players that maybe they need to move on, and a few spaces they need to fill. And equally, it takes time as well. So I think in the same way that you can maybe get carried away celebrating the success, you can also be far too harsh in criticising the defeats. That's why I take this as a little bit of an experimentation process that didn't quite produce the result he wanted.
Good point. And I also, I like the shapes that a 3-4-3 make when attacking.
Yes.
Just looks nice.
Great.
Lots of triangles, lots of pretty, lots of out to the wing and then back in. It's scintillating football in the Conte times, especially against United. Not so much against West Ham.
Yeah, West Ham are the ones putting in the good performance, dominated the match. Kouyaté with the opening goal, of course, and then Fernandes with the second, and Gary Cahill with a late consolation.
That was his first goal for West Ham.
Kouyaté?
Yeah. No, Fernandes.
I was going to say. Yeah. So I think he scored before. Of course, though, Lawrence, the off-the-pitch trouble is what's dominating headlines at the moment.
It's 8% of fans, isn't it?
It's 8% of fans. It's the small minority ruining for everyone, throwing coins at each other, plastic bottles and seats being thrown, Lawrence. More ugly scenes there.
It's unusual. I feel like the Olympic Stadium or London Stadium, the Olympic Stadium, has really had it hard, hasn't it? Really not had a good time.
Getting torn apart.
Yeah, it's just getting torn apart every week.
Getting torn apart.
Obviously they're idiots. Obviously there's rivalry. Obviously the police escorted them in and out. I don't think the police have particularly done themselves any favours in the way they've handled this. I also wonder whether West Ham are trying to put their mark on the new area, moving to a new stadium. I'm not kidding. There are some lovely West Ham fans, but also some real, idiots in every crowd of people. I think there's a bit of a toxic environment around there at the moment.
I think it was, the case in point being that, as well as West Ham fans throwing stuff at Chelsea fans, Chelsea fans were throwing stuff themselves. So the small minority of fans doing that were present in both sets.
They're both not the best. They both don't have the best reputation in London. And I think that that's never going to play well for them. But then when people play up to it, that really doesn't help them. And I guess that's the problem, really, is that you would love if the good fans got shown as well. But there's unfortunately that minority. So.
Going through, of course, face Manchester United, as I said, the day of their Lawrence. What do you make of that tie coming up?
Lovely. I think West Ham away from... The thing is, West Ham away from home have obviously enjoyed themselves a little bit this season because they've not been at home.
So let's see how they challenge United. Some really lovely ties in the next round. Liverpool-Leeds is a great one.
Liverpool-Leeds is a great one. I'm excited for that one. Two big clubs.
Mm. This used to be a really big game back in the day. Of course, Liverpool aren't the power they once were now.
Yes, it's fair to say that. It's fair to say. Of course, there was one other game going on in the EFL Cup this evening, and that was Southampton versus Sunderland.
What a goal.
No surprises.
What a goal.
Southampton winning. Yes.
What a strike. What a turn. It was beautiful.
A 25-yard strike. £16 million for this summer. So that's a great goal for him. No surprises. Sunderland losing again. So not great news for them. So who's gone? Southampton gone through to play?
Sunderland, is there a away kit, just the LA Galaxy kit repurposed?
What is the Sunderland away kit?
Chris, do you see what I mean?
I do. It's got the sash. It's a little bit lighter blue. But yeah, it's basically white with a blue sash across the middle.
Yeah. They're about the level of the LA Galaxy at the moment, aren't they?
I think that's harsh on the Galaxy, to be brutally honest.
Yeah, you're right.
They've won again this season. Yeah. To be fair, though, I will say this Sunderland were denied what I would argue is a Stonewall penalty.
Oh, really?
But again, you put that in the context of the performance. It wasn't exactly an avenue that they earned, if you understand what I'm saying. They just... I appreciate that it is the final days of October.
Sure is.
If I was Sunderland, I'd be very tempted to just start taking stock and preparing for the championship next season. Because if there's one thing you can say about Villa now, who were in that position, is they really didn't prepare. And they knew for months they were going down. And, you know, they got a manager and it didn't really work. They kind of just bought players that looked good on the surface, like, let's spend $30 million on strikers. There was no real preparation. Yet you look at the team that's top, they were actually quite well prepared for this.
They've been expecting it for years.
In a lot of ways, I mean, look, they've got a squad that looks very well balanced.
Surely that's down to Rafa. I mean, that's much more down to Rafa.
Yeah,
I mean,
no, it is. It is, of course. This is the thing, though. This is what bleeds into the other point is, I think, arguably even more important than that, they've just got to decide if David Moyes is the right person, because he's possibly the least inspiring Sunderland coach I can remember.
Yeah, true.
He is just so... Again, I'm not a Sunderland fan, as I'm sure people know, yet I talk to a good deal of them because of locale and all that kind of thing. I see so many of them uninspired by Moyes, and I see completely why. And even with the sort of context of having Rafa Benitez and all that stuff, I would want David Moyes as my club's manager, because he seems to almost go into every game with the idea that we're fighting to get a draw, and if we win, wouldn't that be lovely?
He's a bit like the old Gil of the Premier League, isn't he?
In so many frightening ways, yes.
Yeah. Oh, Moyes. Oh, God. Went in again. Oh, God.
Southampton going through to face Arsenal, who won 2-0 against Reading last night. Also going through to the quarterfinals.
With a young team, by the way.
Newcastle United. Favourable draw. Probably the best draw they could hope for. They're going to take on Hull City, potentially, based on current form. But Newcastle winning 6-0 against Preston, Chris.
Yes, the real turning point for this one was the red card in the first half, and it was as clear a red card as you're going to see. Now, in fairness, Simon Grayson said afterwards that his player did not mean to do what he did, but he also had no complaints at the dismissal. It was essentially a forearm smash on Jack Colback. And, I mean, look, Newcastle fans aren't the greatest fan of Jack Colback, but even they were kind of like, oof, that looks like it hurt. Because he had to come off as well. He had to have stitches, I think. They were already one up when the red card happened anyway, and by the time that had happened, it just let them flood forward to the point where I think they were playing two at the back at one point. I mean, positionally there was four, but the fullbacks were so far advanced. And they could have had 7-8. They hit the post twice in the bar once. And look, at the minute they look absolutely rampant, which is probably why they'll lose 1-0 against Preston on Saturday. But I think in general, they're all just playing with supreme confidence. And even the little things, so there was an argument between Richie and Mitrovic for the penalty. Richie is the designated taker. Mitrovic wanted it because I think he sensed a hat-trick. Richie took it, straight after he finished, he goes up and he kind of consoles Mitrovic. And it's just little things as well. It's a very good time to be a Newcastle fan at this really precise moment.
I mean, how much is that Rafa?
It's not a case of how much. It's a case of it's all Rafa, pretty much. Yes, the players are doing it on the field. I'm not looking to diminish percentage. Their contribution.
100?
It's just everything he does. Again, this will sound like someone firmly in love. He is just someone that seems to get it. He the way he puts them together on the field is very good, but then the fact that on a Friday night he'll go to a foundation event for Newcastle. Doesn't have to, goes along anyway. And I think in so many ways what he has been looking for and what Newcastle have been looking for are identical. And it's just bred this perfect harmony of situations. And again, he does just seem a very nice guy as well.
He does, doesn't he?
Everyone loves Rafa, don't they?
Rafa, Manchester United fans and Chelsea fans.
Yeah, so not everyone loves Rafa.
And they're wankers, so...
Are you happy with the whole draw, though, Chris? Obviously, I know Leeds are in the Championship mid-table there, but in terms of playing Hull, it seems a favourable draw.
I would say so. It's of the teams available, obviously, I'm certainly not going to take shot at Hull. Looking at it, it's between them and Leeds, realistically. They're the two that you want, just because Hull are in bad form and Leeds are in the same division. I don't know kind of how he views the competition as a whole, Rafa. There's elements of him that kind of just says in the media that he wants to focus on the next game, which is very admirable. And often the precursor to winning something like this is when you just focus on the next game. It would be lovely to have that cup run, I think. Again, it's hope. That's, you know what it is. It might. It's the hope and sporting integrity. When I look back through the years before he arrived, after Chris Hughton left, I'm keen to make that important distinction. The lack of sporting integrity. And the lack of hope, that's what hurt the most. And now it feels like both of those things are back. Because he's the one saying that you can win this competition. And people like Alan Pardew were saying, we can't compete with Swansea.
Different mentality.
Maybe. It's just nice to have direction, isn't it? At the end of the day, you know, I'm sure in the same way that Liverpool have got tremendous direction under Klopp and know what they want to do, Tottenham have got intentions and know what they want to do.
Exactly.
It is also just interesting that Benitez is actually a manager who's sort of good at sweeping up after other managers a little bit. He's come into quite a few sides. I mean, you know, his wife is notorious now for having said.
She came in to sweep up
after Mourinho. Or at least trying to, and he wasn't that great at sweeping up after Mourinho, but there are other managers where he's taken little bits, built his own part in, and I think at times players have seen the benefits of what he's done, and especially with certain groups of players, because I was talking about this with another journalist the other day for another TFR documentary, and he was saying sometimes, depending on the players, and that's why it's very important that managers get the right players, some players will listen and some players won't, because some players will be cynical players who won't understand the mentality of what Rafa wants them to do, and other players will not think in that way, and they'll think in the way that he wants them to think, and very often that helps him, and you can see what he's tried to do at Newcastle by getting that group of players together.
And I mean, Chris mentioned Liverpool there, Lawrence, of course, we should talk about Liverpool winning 2-1 over Spurs. Not too upset myself, I have to say. It was a very entertaining match. It was great for, as a Spurs fan, to see some young players out there, to see players like Vincent Janssen get a goal. But in terms of Liverpool, what must be encouraging for you, as well as those exciting prospects starting, is the firepower that Liverpool seem to have. They were very good in front of goal. Maybe Daniel Sturridge should have had a few more goals, has to be said. But in terms of Sturridge scoring, Origi playing well, Danny Ings making a late cameo, it was a good display in terms of the strength and depth up front.
You know, what was interesting was actually, you know, Sturridge did play well, but you, like you say, Origi was more of a star man for Liverpool for me. I think his pace, his skill really showed well, and his support for Sturridge was fantastic. I think later then, you're right, Danny Ings coming on. I think there's also some lovely cameos with Trent playing, and also Stewart, who's very quietly making a case for why he should permanently be in the Liverpool squad. It was all very positive overall for Klopp, but I still think there's some criticism or improvements to make. Obviously Spurs scored.
It wasn't perfect.
No, it wasn't perfect, but I still think that.
And there was,
you know,
yeah, Spurs had a good chance at the end as well to kind of potentially level up.
That's the thing, is that, you know, I also think that you're right in saying, you know, Spurs shouldn't be too disappointed because actually didn't play that badly, and I think that's probably going to be the case in quite a few of these games. It's almost a bad game to judge Liverpool against Spurs. Do you know what I mean by that? Because Spurs are probably a good team to play for Klopp because of the way they like to play and the way they want to play. Let's see how we play some other teams. I'll be interested then.
We only, we had 8 players who were age 23 or under. I think it wasn't a side. I don't think Pochettino was trying to throw away the game or anything like that, but it was clear it wasn't a priority. But we still had Inter getting in. So I think, all good. All good, essentially.
Congratulations.
I'm not too upset. And Leeds, playing Leeds. Excited?
Yeah, love to play Leeds. Great fans to play and quite fun to have back and forth with. And they're a team that actually quite a few people in the Championship wouldn't want to play right now. So, yeah, let's see.
Before we move on to the questions, we've got quite a few questions coming in on Twitter tonight. Is there any other business you gentlemen would like to discuss from the world of football this week?
Probably Joe Hart didn't have the best of nights tonight.
Joe Hart, he had a little blunder, didn't he, against Inter Milan.
He did. He went to claim a ball. A through ball, I think it was Candreva's through ball, and he went to claim it and accidentally kind of palmed it off. So it was going along the floor and he kind of pushed it against Mauro Icardi's knee, and then Icardi just tapped home. One of two goals. His second goal, by the way, Icardi's second goal was brilliant.
What are you trying to say, Chris? He'll move in January?
I don't know if he'll move in January, but I wrote a piece that I've been flogging like a calendar from 2016, saying that he should be for Arsenal in January, because just looking at the numbers, just the way he plays, I mean, even his goal tonight, it's some really good hold-up play, turns, spins, shoots, and it's exactly the kind of goal that you could have seen Arsenal trying to score against Middlesbrough. And in fairness, it's had a, I mean, again, some people disagree with me. Some people think he's an idiot. I get that. He's had some controversies. He's also very young. I just think it makes a lot of sense because the cost of him and all that kind of stuff for someone like Wenger, I think if he...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you worked with them, it would be huge for both of them.
One thing we should also mention, Lawrence, I think it's fair to say, is something that's got a lot of attention over here in the British press in the past week,
yes,
is a poll that was conducted for BBC Five Live. It was a survey of 4,000 reporters. It was essentially about homophobia in football. That's sort of the headline, the top line that came from this study, this survey, was that most football fans would have no problem with gay players if a gay player was to come out.
Excellent, good. Well, let's leave it there and just move on. Fantastic, brilliant. Well, we're all on board.
Apparently, 8% of those asked said they would stop going to support their club if an openly gay player came out of their club.
Brilliant.
Now,
fantastic.
I think I know which pub this was conducted in.
Yes. Now, obviously, Lawrence, highly dispiriting. At the same time,
highly spiriting, knowing that there'll be 8% of seats free in a stadium that we can now fill with reasonable people.
I think
good that we know.
Ian McIntosh of The Guardian has described that 8% as a shower of twats, which is a good way to describe it. But, you know, I don't think it's any secret that there is homophobia in football. It's kind of like, oh, in other news, water is wet. But at the same time, this sort of study, if it brings to light that, you know, homophobia is an issue in football and maybe there's something we should do about it, that is a good thing. But at the moment, it kind of seems like, what action is going to be taken from this, if any?
Sometimes I do think there is a sense of, I get it. I mean, if you want to handle 8% of that many people, that does not represent the wider amount. That would mean there were 1.1 million homophobes or something along those lines. I think Messy Minutes did the numbers on this one. And they are people who, I mean, you also have a serious problem. You just have a serious problem with your approach in life if it stops you supporting a team because there's one person on it that you disagree with. And what's weird is that you disagree with that part of his life. Because I guess that you could have surveyed football fans and you'd say, well, you know, what if you found out that they were, criminals or, you know, they cheated on their wives or any of those sort of things. I'd love to see the context of which it was asked and what other things those people would not support their team for, you know, if they're willing to do it, you know, if it's on moral grounds for them, say they think it's a religious decision or something like that. Not that that justifies it, but what I'm saying is, you know, obviously then, you know, we could say to them, well, you know, if you're doing it for moral reasons, then why do you still support this footballer who's had an affair or this footballer who's done this or this footballer who's done that? And you can kind of challenge your view and find a way of helping that person escape from the twattery that they live in on a daily basis.
Mm. Oh, he's got a fantastic touch, but I don't want him doing what he does it in private.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd stop supporting my entire football club. It is, at the same time, you know, that obviously was the headline that was taken from this 8%, but of course, in the same study, the same survey, 82% of football fans said they would not have a problem. You know, the homophobia does exist in society. I think that this makes that clear that some people really have.
8 sounds quite high, though, doesn't it? I guess that's the problem.
It does.
The number 8 sounds big.
But at the same time, although it's dispiriting to hear that, I think it's good that the study or the survey comes out because it creates that discussion. You know, there hasn't been to date a Premier League footballer or, I believe, a footballer in a sort of major European league who's come out as gay and revealed their sexuality while still playing. I know Thomas Hitzlsperger revealed his sexuality. Yeah, and he was advised not to reveal when he was playing because, you know, he'd be subjected to abuse, he was dead, and all this sort of stuff. So I think until that happens, I think it's good that we sort of have this discussion and try to come to terms with it, essentially, and try to understand what we can do about it.
I don't know where he was at the time, but just in fashion, he did it at a fairly prominent time. I mean, not the peak of his career, so to speak, when he was at Norwich, but still.
Still professional,
And even then, that was, I mean, that was,
well, that was subject to derision from his own family as well.
Yeah, his brother. His brother's got a very, very difficult relationship with that whole thing now. Honestly, I think it's just fear. I think that's what motivates so much of this. As someone that's had both a male and female friend come out, I was... So the female friend, to indulge in the story for a second, the female friend of mine who came out, she asked me if I could tell the rest of our friends that she was gay and seeing someone at the time. And I remember, and this will probably stay with me until I die, the faces when I said it and the range of reactions. And the one person who was very kind of ooh about the whole thing and really kind of weird about it was so much nestled in that stereotype of, oh, they're gay. Oh, that must mean they'll be attracted to me, though. What if they just jump on me like they haven't got self-control or something? It's, I do think so much of it is rooted in fear and difference and all this kind of thing. It's just, it's thoroughly bizarre to me personally. I don't understand how you can kind of justify it.
Yeah.
Although, do tweet in if you want, and, you know, let us know, and we're more than happy to block you. That would be lovely.
I mean, in fairness, if it's a religious thing, then by all means, you know, explain that to us. Because again, there are so many, as Lawrence Riley pointed out, there are so many players that have conducted affairs, have been racist, have punched women. There are such a range of other instances where a player's actually committed a crime.
There are so many other reasons not to watch this bunch of twats out on a pitch. So why pick their sexuality?
There are so many reasons in which a player has committed an actual crime that you think would initiate someone stopping watching their club. I don't understand why something that is innate and can't be chosen is turning them off like that.
It's... I think it's a fascinating issue, especially in football, especially in a game that is, you know, rooted in such, you know, almost old ideas about masculinity and, you know, what it is to be a male. I think it's interesting in 2016 to have that confronted with, well, just modern culture, essentially. And obviously, homophobia still exists. It exists in society, not just in football, but obviously in that space. It's going to be very interesting to see when the first gay player does come out. Because I think it would be shocking if there isn't gay football in the Premier League right now. I think the law of averages just, you know, suggests that that is.
Put it this way, if there isn't a gay player in the Premier League right now, it will be. It's virtually statistically impossible.
Yeah, it's almost impossible, basically. So there is one, and it's a real shame that. Obviously, they feel they can't come out.
And we will find because him.
Of, well, we all will find it. No, it's a shame that, you know, as Chris is saying there about friends of his that have come out, I've got my own friends who've sort of come out and people that I know, and you sort of just feel relieved that they can sort of live their life and they can be who they are. They feel they don't have to hide anything. They don't have to not be themselves. So for a Premier League footballer, with all the attention and all the focus on them, obviously, for them to feel that they can't reveal their own sexuality and sort of be themselves is, you know, it's a real shame that can't happen.
It does also sort of raise questions of the commercial side and how much commercial people should support why players come out as well. Because there's a lot of countries, I think, that there's big marketing that goes on, and I think a lot of clubs worry about that because there's certain countries where it's against the law to be gay in some really big markets for football. And I think some clubs and some players fear that it'll make them unmarketable assets and that they won't get deals for those reasons because people won't stand with them. And there's something quite sad about that too, that, you know, there are other industries that are challenging it. Why isn't football challenging it, considering its power and its... prominence, and also the fact that there are so many people who openly love it. And genuinely... If you don't watch football because you don't like gay people, and essentially you're a homophobe, which maybe you don't have a phobia of homosexuals, but you know what I mean, then I'm kind of glad you're not all right. Like, I'm kind of glad you don't like it. Do you know what I mean? Because if genuinely, if that ruins your experience of football, you've got wider issues, mate.
I have to disagree with that. I think so to say. But I think it'd be fascinating to see how the world and how, if it happened in Britain, how British society would react to that. But I'd also be quite scared of what the reaction would be.
I mean, you think you'd be scared, and you're a straight man, as far as I know. You're a straight man.
Yes. But I would be scared in terms of, you know, it would be wholly depressing, I imagine. And I think that's for sure.
But at least we'd know who those people, at least we know who that 8% are. Put it this way, if you're very vocal about being, you know, I love people who say things like, yeah, I'm all for free speech, you should be able to say whatever you want. But I can then also reply with, you are genuinely a twat.
if you are a homophobe. And that's my right to free speech. I think that's the problem, is that a lot of people forget that on a very regular basis, is that people think free speech ends at the point they stop talking. And and they sort of go, well, I've had my say, so we're all good. That's not how free speech works.
Yeah. It's doesn't just work for you, mate. It's not one rule for you, one for another.
Yeah. Yes, Noel.
Guys, do tweet us your thoughts at the Front Free. It's obviously a very important subject, interesting subject as well. So do send us your thoughts at the Front Free. You have been sending your questions in, though, tonight on the world of football. Let's get into them right now. First up, Ollie writes in, OllieShep97, and he says, how are you guys? No one ever asks.
Wait, didn't he say, how are you, Kristen?
No, he said, how are you guys? Chris said, my favourite question of the night. And he just went, yeah, how are you, Kristen?
Good.
He just asked about it. How are you, Kristen?
Yeah, not too bad.
Yeah, right. I'm actually decent. Yeah. All good. What about you? Lawrence, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. It's been a bit, yeah, it was interesting to watch Man United, Man City night. Wasn't the most scintillating game, but it was. Go back and watch it on the YouTube, because that was what made it interesting.
I'm right as well. Thank you for asking, Ollie.
Sorry,
I did actually have.
How are you?
You know what? I was a little bit annoyed tonight, to be honest, because midway through the show, Lawrence Barnaby Slater from Spurred On got you a nice piece, didn't he, Lawrence? You asked for a nice piece.
Yeah.
I thought, you know what I'll do? I'll order a delivery. You know, I'll get myself a nice, dinner for myself. A chicken and halloumi sandwich on the way from a place called Kuyana in London. If you haven't been there, do go. It's like a Hawaiian burger place. It's beautiful. Anyway.
Oh, that is good.
Waiting for my food. Lovely, yeah. It's ticking down, 40 minutes to go or whatever. So I look at my phone and I'm like, oh, man, what's this delivery? It's an hour now. You know, what's going on? So I look at my phone, it's like delivered. I was like, hang on, what's going on here? I head upstairs, TFR Towers. I'm like, there's a guy on the reception sort of thing. He's like, oh, I haven't seen anything.
He wipes his mouth and he
wipes me from his
No, he wasn't. I looked at him quite carefully to make sure that wasn't the case. But I walk outside and I see a delivery guy there. And I walk outside, open door, I'm like, oh, mate, did you have something for Adam? He was like, yeah, mate. I was like, where is it? He was like, oh, I gave it to Colin. I was like, who's Colin? He was like, oh, he was just coming back from the gym. He said he was going to give it to you. I was like, what? He was like, yeah, Colin's got it. I was like, what are you talking about, mate? I was like, who the fuck is Colin? I was like, have you just given my food to some random bloke?
He was called
like,
Colin?
Yeah, sorry. I was like, what? So there is someone at TFR Towers called Colin in the office that I work in who stole my fucking delivery.
Wait, but you didn't have to pay for it again then, did you?
I've emailed Uber and I've emailed Deliveroo and asked for a refund because I didn't get any fucking food. Fucking Colin got it. Fucking Colin.
Meanwhile, Colin's writing a fantastic post-story.
The cheek. I couldn't believe it. I was like looking around. I was like, whoever this Colin guy is, surely not. He wouldn't, but he fucking did. He had himself a nice chicken and a loony sandwich and a can of Sprite as well. Cheeky fucker. So, yeah.
Thank you for asking, Ollie. Yeah, just give it to me. That is absolutely outrageous.
It's a long day as well. It's been a long week. It's been a long day, and I was really looking forward to it. And fucking Ollie. Ollie, you asked a nice question. Fucking Colin.
Fucking
stole
Ollie.
Stole me sandwich.
Are you Adam? No, I'm Colin. Brilliant. Here's your sandwich.
Here's your fucking dinner, yeah. But did he say, oh, yeah, I'll go and give it to Adam or something? Just be like, yeah, I'll definitely go. Who does that? Who bloody does that? Do you know what I mean? Incredible.
Did you get a description of him?
No, he just was like, yeah, Colin, he was on the way back from the gym. He said he was going to give it to you. He didn't fucking give it to me. Unreal. Anyway,
definitely sounds like a delivery driver who's just eaten the sandwich out of boredom.
Not only that, but it's sort of like he's on his way back from the gym. What? So he's going to work at 9 o'clock at night on his way back from the gym.
He probably even didn't walk into the office, he just walked off. He was just like, yeah, cheers, mate, I'm good. I'll see you later.
Yeah, are you Adam?
He must have been. I think he was a new delivery driver because he's probably going to get, hopefully he doesn't get in trouble, but you know, come on, mate. That's mental. They just give it to some bloke.
He doesn't get in trouble, but come on, I didn't get me sandwich.
Delivery, if you're listening, I'll take a free order or something like that. We'll all take a free dinner as an apology.
We'll all take one, and all of our listeners will as well. Yeah.
Yes, and all the listeners say, well, anyway, we'll move on. I'll try and calm myself down. Gary Goals, the main man, Dayson 1996, has written in, did any of you really try to become pro footballers? If so, how close were you?
Chris?
I wouldn't say I tried. I would say
I just made it through natural talent.
It's very effortless, didn't really. Enjoy. As someone currently playing in the Thai Premier League, no, I would say I gave it a go for about a year or two. I played with a few lads who were at Newcastle. I was all right. I wasn't terrible. I was a bit small. I didn't grow until I was quite late into my teens.
Chris, when you say you played with a few lads from Newcastle, do you mean that time you did that modelling and you got to play with Shaka Hislop out on the pitch?
Oh, God. No, that was one of two prominent. I was also... Have you been... Yeah, you've both been to Newcastle, right?
Of course we have. Lovely place.
Of course.
You know the Centre for Life?
No.
Yes.
It's the big museum, basically.
There's a museum in Newcastle. It's not the way that Geordie tells it.
It's not just pamphlets from London either.
If that's what it was. It's a magical place.
It's like the Queen's there. It's really amazing. So when that opened, they had a big, what do you call it? Kind of not roller coaster, but you know, one of those motion rides where the chair moves. It sounds so stupid in a Geordie accent, I know. Any other accent, this would be totally fine. But one of those motion rides that moves along with the screen.
Shakes it and offers his chair around.
Just two staff members while you sit in one of those PlayStation racing chairs and they shake it. I was in that as well. There was a scene where it included Newcastle and you had to kick a football. And I was in that as well.
Wow.
That was probably as close as I came. But yeah, I played with a few lads who went to the Newcastle Academy. So I was...
You're probably the closest out of all of us, I assume. Unless, Lawrence, you had some trials I don't know about.
Burglary.
Yeah. She dropped the charges in the end, so everything went away.
Fly tipping.
Trying to move past that.
No. I've never tried. It never struck me to. I didn't want to be a footballer. I was happy to play in the park, and that was it. Maybe get into the game in other ways, but never in like playing.
No, definitely not.
What about you, Adam? Do you?
No, never even close. I was decent as a teenager. But
that went very quickly, didn't it?
Never thought, oh God, I'm going to become a pro footballer. So
no, rightly so.
Has anyone seen Dave play football?
Chris wins.
We've all played football with each other.
Oh,
Dave is good.
Lawrence, do you want to play football on Saturday?
Good. Yes. What time?
At 11 a.m.
Great. Why don't we tell everyone where?
Guys, if you want to come down and watch us play, five aside, we're playing at 11 a.m. in King's Cross. We'll see you there.
Brilliant. In the station.
Dan. Yeah, in the station.
Get numbers in the right order.
Tell them. I don't actually want to tell them.
No.
Cool. Daniel writes in saying, "With Zlatan's current poor form, how is Adam and Dave feeling about their wager?" Well, Dave's not here, obviously, so I, for one, am feeling great about my wager. I was seriously worried when I was on my travels, when I was hearing about all the goals he's banging in. My girlfriend was even more so, but it's looking good. He scored 4 league goals, I believe, and it's all about league goals, guys. 20 league goals, it's not happening. So Dave will be dyeing his hair peroxide blonde at the end of the season, and that is hopefully a fact.
Wait, Justin, Dave has to go peroxide blonde?
Yep.
That was the deal. Messy blonde, we agreed. So I would happily do it because I was just so confident that it's not happening. I was starting to panic, but it's all good. It's all good, essentially. Here is a question for you, Chris. Justin Kanika specifically asks, Kristen, what are your thoughts on André Silva? Has Portugal solved its number 9 problems?
Very, very good question.
That's one of Justin.
He's definitely talented. I won't contest that. It does take talent to score in the Portuguese league. The problem is he's playing in a side that tends to dominate. I think he's got some skills. How he integrates with that national team, I'm not so sure yet, because I want to see more of him and see how he works best. To watch him, he just looks like a very clinical poacher to me. Kind of, and I say this very loosely, in the mould of Paleta. I think they need someone that can bring others into play, Portugal, for the style that they play. I don't think it can be... that kind of poacher. Otherwise, you would just stick Ronaldo up there and let them do the rest. Although, in fairness, watching Ronaldo for Real Madrid at the minute, you would argue that's kind of the role he's going to be shunted into if he wants a future with the national team, because he's not maybe contributing in the same ways as he used to.
Another good question here from AKA Juice 26, always writing in with good questions. Thank you very much. He said, Nzonzi has been in terrific form this season. Should he get called up for France? We obviously mentioned this on the weekend, Lawrence, for Sevilla. He's been fantastic alongside another Frenchman, Sami Nasri, who I don't imagine is going to be in France anytime soon. But as for Nzonzi, what do you reckon, Lawrence? Obviously, they've got a massively talented squad, France, so much depth, especially in midfield. But can Nzonzi make the squad?
That's probably what I was wondering. How old's Nzonzi now? Stephen Nzonzi.
I believe he's 26, 27.
So it's not unreasonable to say that he's on course, but I do think that's also quite a stacked midfield in a sense. So it's difficult for him to break into it.
Yeah, because you might say, on form, maybe he deserves to be ahead of, say, Paul Pogba, who's had a somewhat difficult start season, but at the same time, Pogba's always going to be on that list.
Well, you know who discovered Nzonzi, don't you?
Newcastle.
Big Sam Allardyce.
Yeah.
Did he? Big Sam.
He was the one that brought him to Blackburn. From League Two, I think. Yeah, League Two.
Yeah.
For you French listeners who want to be offended.
But yeah, you've got, obviously, there's Kante as well. There's players like Matuidi in there. I mean, I'd imagine he would get a call up if he continues for the next squad. Yeah. But yeah.
Looking it up, he's under 27.
Why not?
So he's not old. He also started at the PSG Academy for a brief period as well.
You'd also argue...
The more you know.
Would you argue that... where would he fit into that team? So who would you take out to put Nzonzi in?
That's a good question.
I don't know if I can answer that, because I don't know if he fits with the system for France. And they already do seem to be playing quite out of joint for a couple of players. So why make it him that you fit around? I'm not sure that works.
AKA Juice also asks, we'll do this one quickly, who should win the Ballon d'Or?
The Ballon d'Or, as everyone seems to bloody call it every year. Everyone forgets in the year off how to pronounce Ballon d'Or. They go, yeah, Ballon it's the d'Or. Ballon d'Or, mate. By the way, Stephen Nzonzi is 6'3". You live in here then.
Ballon d'Or. Chris, the nominations came out. Obviously, it's the big, long list before it gets whittled down to that three-man short. Does that still happen now, even though FIFA have sort of France Football have divorced? Yeah. This is now back at France Football. They're in charge of it. If you don't know, FIFA used to have a World Player of the Year award. They entered into agreement with France Football, who's the French publication that ran the Ballon d'Or. For so many years. That was only for, was it 6 years they've done that for? 7, 8 years? And now it's reverting back to what it was beforehand, where FIFA's going to have its World Player of the Year award separately from the Ballon d'Or. It's all new. It's voted for by journalists instead of the captains and managers of the international team. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see who does win, but I think the assumption is because of the year he's had, it will be Cristiano Ronaldo, closely followed by Antoine Griezmann. But you look at the achievements of Ronaldo this year, you look at the Euros, you look at the Champions League, and obviously Griezmann finished second in both those competitions. I think I'd be very surprised if it doesn't go to Cristiano. Any arguments?
Pierre-Emerick.
Interesting. To be fair, AKA does says who should win the Ballon d'Or. He doesn't say who will.
I mean, Aubameyang's not one. He did get African Player of the Year, didn't he?
He did. Was that the one Yaya Touré wasn't happy about?
Yeah, very much so, yeah. Yes. That was quite a while ago now. Messi's not really one you can make an argument for. Neymar, maybe if he won Copa. Is Suarez in there? Maybe because Suarez didn't achieve on the international level, but then that's not really his fault, was it?
I think there was some surprise
He was injured for a good portion.
And he also he wasn't allowed, yeah.
Wait, would this include Copa America 2016 or 15?
16.
I got this wrong last time, and someone was like, "Oh, it's the last year, you idiot."
It's the calendar year. It will be the calendar year of 2016.
Right. Okay.
Okay. What about?
Yes, it'll be Ronaldo.
What about?
Is Ronaldo or Griezmann? It'll be Ronaldo.
Yeah, Ronaldo's achieved the most in the calendar year, realistically.
Yes. Thank God.
Even though he wasn't on the pitch for Portugal, when they actually
is Gareth Bale an outside shout? Because I mean, really, he achieved a lot of the Euros.
Oh yeah, well.
And he's been very good for Real Madrid.
Mm.
Arguably as significant as Ronaldo at times in those Champions League games.
If Wales had won the Euros, yes.
If Wales had won the Euros, though, then that would have been an even bigger achievement. Than
I think this becomes a very binary competition, the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, you almost need a position. You almost need a Ballon d'Or 11.
If you haven't won anything, you're out for stars. You've got to have won something. And then it gets down to the minutiae of, well, how many goals have you scored?
It's always the goals, isn't it?
You know, you turn up in a nice suit, all that kind of stuff.
Good question here from Mark Anthony Bustos. Thank you so much for your question. Will this Manchester United team catch up to the top four this season? Essentially saying, will they finish in the top four? Based on current form, and based on the way things are shaping up, I think it's hard to see them finishing the top four as it stands. If you're looking at Man City, you're looking at Arsenal, you're looking at Liverpool, you're looking at Spurs and Chelsea as well. I mean, I think in our predictions at the start of the season, I said they would finish in top four. They've been somewhat, a little bit disappointing, I think it's fair to say, Lawrence. Can you see them finishing in that top four?
I also just think a little bit inconsistent. You know, it's all well and good playing sides that you can beat because of the way your system works. But, you know, there are times where this system would work against every team for Mourinho. And I think what his solution has to come from is, what's he going to do against sides who are not going to play into that? And I get it. Like, you know, obviously there's the frustration of trying to find that. And then, you know, the high of Fenerbahce, the low of Chelsea, then again the high of beating City. The not false high, but, you know, they didn't start with their ideal 11, I don't think, City. But then, I mean, you know, it's also worth saying that, you know, United didn't miss Bailly too badly against City, but then were they really challenged? I don't know if he will. I think they probably will catch it, but ultimately, I don't know if Manchester. That's the frustration: is they probably will catch it and not deserve it from what people believe from the outside, but they probably will end up catching.
Here is a great question again on Manchester United. Shane Hesner. Kay Oak and David Shanahan both asked the same question about Henrik Mkhitaryan. Kay Oak asks, what the hell is going on? # Kagawa part 2. Henrik Mkhitaryan, of course, has not been featured in the Manchester United team in the last few weeks. He was supposed to be available tonight, fit and ready to play. He wasn't even included in the 18-man squad, let alone the start 11. All sorts of rumours swirling around Chris as a professional and brilliant journalist yourself. Have you heard anything about Mkhitaryan? You got any opinions on this situation?
Have you seen the film Space Jam?
Yes.
Got some good news and bad news. I think, honestly, it's not Space Jam. He hasn't been taken over by aliens. I think he is taking a little bit longer to fit into the system. If you look at last year, for Dortmund, he tended to play in a position that Manchester United don't really have right now. So it could go back to the idea, and I kind of thought this watching their business in the summer, that Man United were a little bit about buying names rather than working out whether people actually fit in. So it was a case of, you know, we need Pogba, we need Zlatan, oh, we need another attacking midfielder because we don't score goals. That's great, but how do you fit them all in? So it's just, for me at the minute, it doesn't seem to fit the style that Mourinho wants. And from what I had heard, stroke read, I think even Ian Smith said this on the TFR live stream, he's a little bit of a slow integrator, Mkhitaryan. So I think at the minute they're probably trying to find a good position for him to work in. Instead of just throwing him in there and making him look like he's a duffer, they're taking their time with it. Because again, he did cost a lot of money. And why would you needlessly open your player up to some needless stick when you can take your time and work out the best position for him?
Good point. Well said. Final question tonight comes from the main man, Carlos. Zaldivar, always sending in great questions. We've done a few on Manchester United there, so he sent in a few. I won't do the Manchester United one because of what we talked about there, but he's got an interesting one here. Why do managers often struggle against their four clubs? Pep versus Barca, Mu versus Chelsea.
Klopp versus Borussia Dortmund. Oh.
Yes. There you go. That's the exception that proves the rule. Luis Enrique v. Celta, Miguel Herrera versus Club America. Is this a fact that managers often struggle against their former clubs? It's just a pattern that's emerging recently. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, lads? Obviously, highly emotional to return to your former club. There's so much pressure, so much focus on you. You know, it's a difficult situation to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, it's also probably just the time that you end up playing those clubs as well. I mean, you know, there are times where managers early on in a cycle will end up playing their former club, and very often they maybe left the former club in a slightly different situation. Maybe they've gone off for a new challenge. I think it's, you know, part of that is looking at the stage in which both those cycles are in. And there are times where you face your former club and maybe you forget it. Some managers will forget it because, you know, they've just had a very normal result, or a result which they would consider to be a little bit easier. I mean, what do you mean by Klopp? Because, I mean, Klopp faced Dortmund and he didn't struggle, but also at the same time, he did struggle. So they got through, but by the skin of their teeth.
Mm.
Is it not the emotions of the whole thing?
I guess, do you think that's what also makes it so much more memorable when you win, whether you win or lose, whereas with other teams, you just sort of put it to one side?
I just feel like, and I know I often take it down this canal, if you will.
Interesting choice of route.
Yeah, that was probably the last word.
I think I'm going to take it down this industrial canal.
I am Northern. Forgive me.
A lot from now on.
I do think that when you go back to somewhere like, if you go back to somewhere that you know, you're far more likely to overthink things, not even in terms of your perception and wanting it to go so well that you try so hard, but even just the minute details of, I know this worked when I was there, and I know this tripped them up, and you just overthink it. The best... I'm reading at the minute, I think it's called The Inner Game of Tennis or something along the line. I can't remember the exact title. It's in my bag. And it talks about the idea that the best performance in sport always flows effortlessly when you don't really think about it too much. In fact, Henrik Mkhitaryan said he read it and really enjoyed it. But I think the same applies to coaches in that sense, is that when you try so hard to think and almost force it, that's when you'll likely make a mistake, and because you're so focused on getting it perfect and getting it right, you never stop to think what you could get wrong.
Guys, there you have it. That is the Front Three podcast Wednesday night. Do keep your questions coming in on Twitter at the Front Three.
Can I also just say there's one thing that I remembered?
Oh, please go on.
Kind of remembered. Anyone else heard about this? The Thailand situation with the king?
I have heard. I have heard.
Please be careful. Please be careful with what you're about to say.
Yeah, go on.
So the king is sadly passed.
And yes, very sad.
Okay, so far.
We're all very sad about that. No one more so than on the podcast.
Mm.
And obviously, royalty is considered in different ways. But in Thailand, they've just cut the league short, apparently, by three games, relegating two sides who could have stayed up.
Mm-hmm.
18 teams met and 17 teams voted to just end the league there.
Cool day.
It was frosty for that 18th team.
Well, I mean, I guess it must have been one of the sides who was getting relegated, right?
It was one of the mid-table sides. It was the side in the Tolly Pulis position, just desperate to finish out the season.
Imagine if that happened in England. By the way, the cup is being finished by lottery. It's just being drawn out of a hat, essentially.
I heard it was going to be decided by a coin toss.
Interesting. And then you go from the cup final. Which is essentially, imagine if the same happened in England. And we just went, we'll just stop the season there. When the Queen died.
mate. There'd be riots.
It's just, yeah, genuinely, there'd be more riots because people miss the football more than they miss the Queen. Like David, the only team going into the meeting is Sunderland going, yeah, cut it short, we're done, no more, just, yeah. And David Moyes is going, yeah, we'll use that as an excuse, fantastic, yeah. Oh, we went down because of the Queen. We were gonna.
You can always blame it. You don't have to be culpable.
Yeah, we could have stayed up if it bloody Queen.
Yeah, you can always blame that. It's an interesting situation.
Yeah.
That is all we shall say.
I mean, to be respectful, it is just a very unusual situation in sport. I mean, it's people putting completely to one side the idea of competition because of something, a greater cause, something that is, in their minds, a much greater cause.
I sort of wonder why they didn't say, you know, like, let's have a couple of months break, yeah, or whatever. And obviously you need to have a period of respect, have a period of mourning, but maybe just... on the games later.
Yeah, I do find it a little bit weird. I imagine the guy who went, right, well, we'll just stop the league there then, call it all to a halt. No more games. They're going, should we not just pause the league? No, it's all over. Everything's gone.
It's done.
It's dark. Everything is black in the world. The whole world is... the clouds are closing in. No, well,
the football's over.
We can just pause the league if you want, Mike. No. No, no. Everything must stop. And maybe that is... Maybe that because something else has come to an end. It might be a cultural belief. But you know, I'm just imagining similar happening in England, and it would just never happen here.
Yeah, it would definitely not happen. People would not be happy. I think there would be either a break or it would just carry on.
I just think it would carry on.
Just carry on.
Did the football finish, or did the football pause because Diana died?
No, there was a minute silence, I think, though.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
football. Yeah,
that tends to be our response to bereavement is a minute silence.
Yeah.
Or minutes applause, it varies.
Yeah. Depends. Depends
I wonder what would happen if the Queen... What would happen to football if the Queen died? Would they call off the matches and stuff like one weekend?
No.
Because it's the Queen.
Nah.
No?
She didn't want... They'd play them and then all the commentary would have said she'd have wanted it this way.
Maybe the Football Republic would bundy a lot more scrutiny.
Yeah.
It was your concept first.
There'd be a minute silence, wouldn't there? Maybe the national anthem blaring out. So
I got to admit, that's a very good political joke.
Yeah. Very good. Right, guys, let's wrap up the show there. Before we go, I do want to say comment of the week is awarded this week to Connor Fan 123 from Ireland. I like this guy already, but his review is called "Good Bit of." And it was an interesting one. He said, 5 stars for one. Thank you very much, Connor. Fan. Great football podcast with a humble host that you would find hard to dislike.
Good.
Thank you, Connor.
Oh. A guy wouldn't call me the horse, but...
A guy who eats and sleeps stats. Obviously, they.
Again, I wouldn't say that Chris eats and sleeps stats, but...
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. Interestingly, the most politically correct Liverpool fan... Who seems to hate Liverpool.
Again, he supports Newcastle, but
bit harsh on Chris. And more often than not, Chris Hennage.
Ah, oh, lovely.
There you have it. Connor, thank you very much for your review.
More often than not, the Chris Hennage story.
Because that's the review everybody wants.
That could be the title of your biography, yeah.
Was he there?
A lovely horse. Man who knows his stats. A politically correct Liverpool fan. And Chris.
More often than not, Chris.
And someone who Chris. Sometimes is there.
Jesus.
Chris, what would you call your autobiography?
A dildo and a nunnery.
Oh dear.
What I feel like right now, Jesus.
Overused.
God. Underappreciated.
Oh, what would you call your autobiography?
Left in your packaging. A little bit weird, isn't it? Weirdly moist, the Chris Hennage story.
Weirdly moist.
Oh, my girlfriend hates that word.
What, moist?
Yeah, seriously, she's got a real problem with it.
A lot of people do not like the word moist. Mainly after the whole Dapper Laughs thing. But, yeah. It would just be called The Lawrence McKenna Story. My Story.
Lawrence McKenna's. My Story. The Lawrence McKenna story, my story.
Yeah.
By Lawrence McKenna.
by Lawrence McKenna. Forward, Lawrence McKenna.
Oh, very good.
What would you call your book, Adam? How the Football Republic Failed by Adam.
No, Where's Colin? Where's my delivery? Where's Colin?
Where's Colin by Adam Bolt.
Just a tale of just like, you know, a time of revenge.
You know what? That's not a bad YouTube video. Is a good YouTube video would actually be you trying to find Colin. Your delivery.
Fucking Colin. I've got a refund, by the way. You'll be glad to know. But delivery have refunded as they should.
Is there any CCTV in the building? Any CCTV around?
Yeah, I think I should go to these links. I think I should do it.
Genuinely, what if you did? You might be able to find out the person.
I'll look into it tomorrow. Guys, if you have any information about the disappearance of my delivery, if you were in the vicinity of Tottenham Court Road this evening and you saw a man called Colin who may or may not have been coming from the gym.
That man looks like he's called Colin.
Colin from the gym. He was wearing shorts, basically.
He was coming from the gym and he had a bag of tasty food and he was chowing down. But he might have had a slightly guilty look on his face. Then get in touch.
Blogging shorts was passing the CFR office.
But he might have, you know, he might look a bit
delivery
spooked.
Driver was like, he Adam? I'm Colin. But I know an Adam. Oh, great. He's a big, yeah.
Are you on your way back from the gym? Yeah, sure, gym.
Listen, if you saw this guy, he may have been looking over his shoulder. He may have been a bit nervous. Then, you know, let me know. But he would have actually been quite delighted, I reckon, because the sandwich.
Quite delighted.
It's banging, I've got to say. It's a banging sandwich.
I think he's Ronnie Biggs, living in constant fear because he's taking your sandwich.
He definitely is, mate. I'd be surprised if he's able to sleep tonight. He shouldn't be able to sleep tonight. The guilt should be eating away at him.
For a guy in shorts looking shifty, constantly over his shoulder, some may say.
Exactly. It was a bloody nice sandwich.
Really nice. Adam, how do you know it was a bloody? It might have been an awful sandwich. It might have had salmonella.
I've had it before. It's really nice. That's the reason I ordered it. Hopefully it did have salmonella. Hopefully it bloody did.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening to The Front Three. Do send in your reviews and rate the podcast on iTunes. Don't have to give us 5 stars, but if you just let us know what you enjoy about the podcast, what you want us to talk about, all that sort of stuff, it helps people find The Front Three, which at the end of the day is a great.
You do have to give a positive character assessment, though.
Yeah, don't just say...
Don't just state somebody is present.
Yeah, if you like us, tell us why. If you don't, tell us why. And maybe we'll improve.
Your review's not... Don't do that. That's worse. That's far worse.
Okay, sorry.
Your review just isn't a Ouija like board, all right? Let's put it that way. I feel Kristen's present.
Yeah. Fucking Derek Acora in the comments.
Until... Sunday, Chris, where can people more often than not find you?
On Twitter, trying to get retweets and favourites.
Lovely.
Or sometimes in the room.
K-H-E-N-E-A-G-E, I believe. And Lawrence, where can people find you?
Great question. Go at Lozcast, L-O-Z-C-A-S-T. Where can they find you, Adam?
You can find me on Twitter at Adam Boltwood. You can also find us on YouTube at The Front Three.
Good. Yeah, Dave's going up there.
Lawrence and Dave just did a lovely video on Monday about Sanchez versus Son, a little bit of false nine analysis. It's tasty, and you should go and watch it.
Best thing that came from it.
And Dave on skateboards.
Best thing that came from it was the GIF. GIF?
Yeah, it is a really good GIF, to be fair. Good GIF, yeah. As the creator would say. Guys, we will see you on Sunday. Until then.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Have a bloody great week.
Bye.
Bye.